Benacik v. ABCO. Mr. Sapphire Bernstein.
Yes. Morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Leonard Sapphire Bernstein, and I'm the counsel for Gary Zamnik, the plaintiff and appellant. I would just like to say that we're not asking the Court to make any new law in this case. We're asking the Court to apply what we think are pretty clear Seventh Circuit precedents, good law that the Court's already made to this case. Though the trial court did not properly apply it in three ways. Essentially, the insurance company did not apply the policy standard. There was a standard in the policy for disability benefits. This is an appeal from a denial of disability benefits from Mr. Zamnik. The insurance company didn't apply the policy standard, but another standard. It ignored good evidence in the record without explaining what that was, and it demanded objective proof of what was essentially a pain reason for why he could not work. Mr. Zamnik was a 30-year employee of ABCO, Inc. That's a machine tool maker. He was a head of sales at the time that he became disabled. His job entailed flying all over the country and making meetings with the clients on the sales floor. In 1996, he was diagnosed as having a degenerative illness affecting all of his joints, including his ankles, his feet, his arms, and his back. He'd been under the long-term care of one physician from 1985, I believe, and a rheumatologist from 1996, and a surgeon off and on when it became necessary. The problem with the denial is that there were only two reviewers at the insurance company level to start with, uncredentialed nurses. We don't know, they're called nurses, we don't know what their credentials are. They plainly did not understand what the rheumatologist said. They looked at one incident and another incident, and they said, well, this doesn't look like it adds up to disability. But what Dr. Pallella said consistently in all of his letters was that this was a long-term degenerative illness, increasing pain in all the joints. He knew that eventually, this is 128 of the record, knew that eventually this would result in disability. But the question was how much pain Mr. Zamnik could absorb before it would come to that pain and the disabling effects of the medication that he took to deal with that pain. Only after the denial, when Mr. Zamnik asked the Department of Insurance in Illinois to look at the denial, the Department of Insurance sent it back to the insurance company and said, don't you want to have a doctor look at the doctor reports? Then they sent it out to a doctor, supposedly Dr. Truchelet. We don't know what kind of doctor. We don't have any evidence of what his credentials are, except he has doctor before his name. And they sent it with a specific question to him. They didn't ask him about disability. They said, do the medical records indicate a functional impairment at this time when he claims that he stopped working, between September and December of 1999? Now, he had a long-term disabling illness. There's no question about that. Starting back in 1996, it's all explained in great detail, how it manifests in different joints. Now it's an ankle, now it's a back. They're all simultaneous, but they have crises at different times. Dr. Truchelet doesn't talk about that at all. He doesn't discuss Dr. Pallella's letter in any detail. He just says, well, if you look at the medical evidence in the record in 1999, he just turned up at Dr. Pallella. And Dr. Pallella said, well, you have to have some surgery. So a couple months later, he has surgery. That's not a continuous record of disability. Now, what's required by the insurance plan is much simpler. Here's the requirements of the policy. You have to be continuously unable to perform the substantial and material duties of your occupation. You have to be under the regular care of a physician. You have to be not gainfully employed. That's not the standard they employed. They said, we need a certain quantum of objective proof at the time that you claim disability. The disability began because at that time he could not work any longer.
Mr. Sapphire Bernstein, even if we were to accept your representations on his condition, what about the delay in filing?
Well, the trouble with taking what is a medical record and elevating it into an administrative record is that you have very little direct testimony as to what happened in that intervening period. The insurance company didn't go after any. All you have is medical records that were submitted. There is, at pages 305 and 306 of the record, an interview, the first interview that Mr. Zamenik made. He explains that he wanted to work. He was a 50-year-old man with a six-figure income. All commissions. He didn't make daily salary. The commissions, in fact, lasted all the way through the year 2000 to December on sales that he made in 1999. So though he stopped working, in one sense, in 1999, he was not in immediate need of income until practically the end of 2000. He was not an old man.
Why didn't he file his claim before September 7th, 1999?
Pardon?
Why didn't he file it with some doctor's report?
Well, speaking strictly from the record, I can't say why, because there isn't anything in the record that explains it. I can make the inference that he had income and he was trying to return to work. That I know. That's in the record, pages 305 and 306. But he did not want to call a halt to his career.
The plan does require that you file for benefits within 30 days after loss or as soon as reasonably possible.
Yes. Well, as soon as reasonably possible, right.
Are you suggesting this record reflects a filing as soon as reasonably possible?
I'm saying the record is really insufficient on a summary judgment to say that it wasn't. Yes, absolutely. Because Mr. Zamenik, at 50 years old, was not ready to retire. He was hoping to return to work.
See, the problem I have is even in the response to the motion for summary judgment, he didn't explain why there was a delay. I mean, I think we're all troubled by that. And we need to know what your position is on it. See, right now, I don't think we have a record on it. There's no explanation as to why he didn't file timely.
He didn't file within
that period, and if that's the case, you're out the box, aren't you?
No, I think the precedent, and we cited it in the reply brief, is that there's a reasonable requirement. There's a reasonableness requirement, which is inherent in that. It's not a 30-day. I mean, after all, this is $700,000 worth of benefits. It's not a 30-day.
Right. So then you need to be able to tell us what was reasonable about that delay.
That's right.
You need to be able to tell us.
There's very little in the record.
Right.
I can represent that there were attempts that were being made for temporary benefits. He made some ineffective and inappropriate attempts to file for benefits, which were rejected, and later he found out what the correct course was, and he filed at that time.
And do you have any case law or authority that supports your sort of view of what was reasonable? You know, that his actions, not being able to move very forcefully, and just what you said, any case law that supports that, your position that was reasonable?
Did he not file for the permanent benefits until about 6 or 9 months after? I mean, first of all, it was more of a 6-month delay because it wasn't until, well, what happened was there's a 3-month period which he has to qualify before he qualifies for benefits, so that's December of the year of 1999. Then he was in an accident in June of 2000, which further delayed him. He was hospitalized in June of 2000. Immediately after that, he did file for benefits. So the question is whether or not, I mean, what the 6-month period when he was hoping to return to work and when he was applying for other benefits is not an unreasonable period, I don't think. If we had to establish it, we would establish that on a remand.
That's your rebuttal time.
That's right. If the court has no other questions, then I'll reserve my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Sapphire Bernstein. Mr. Brown?
May it please the court, counsel. In fact, Your Honors, the delay in filing the disability claim was 16 months. The last date of work was September 7, 1999, and the claim wasn't filed until January 10, 2001. And there is nothing in the record, nor do I believe could there be something in the record that could reasonably explain a 16-month delay. The court is properly concerned about this delay because of the prejudicial effect the delay has on the insurance company's ability to administer a claim. How could it look back 16 months and decide what the man's condition was? And it is a problem, and the insurance company isn't required to show the prejudicial effect under the Lavorsi Marine case. However, that prejudice does exist. The district court's decision in this case was correct and should be affirmed. It properly applied the de novo standard of review and correctly concluded that the administrator's decision to deny appellate's claim was proper. The long-term disability policy requires that a participant be continuously disabled for at least 90 days or for a minimum of 90 days following the last day of work. In this case, there's just no medical evidence to support that the appellant was unable to perform his job when he left. He wasn't. He was only seeing his doctor sporadically. There was about a three-month delay between treatment when he had a bunion removed from his foot. After that, the bunion was healed. The doctor gave him a release to work. After that, he was in a motorcycle accident or an automobile accident. There are two different thoughts about what that accident was. That was in June of 2000. The doctor that looked after him for that for those injuries was ready to return him to work in July of 2000. So there really isn't anything in this record to support that the appellant was unable to perform his job after September 7, 1999, for that 90-day period that followed. The proper standard of review is applied. It's de novo. It's the harsher standard. There really isn't any issue on that. And I think the judge gave us a very good and thorough reading in support of to support his decision. And if the court doesn't have any questions of me, I will yield the rest of my time.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Mr. Sapphire Bernstein?
I would just like to respond to the reference that there was a motorcycle accident. Again, the problems with taking a medical record as an administrative record where there's been no testimony, no inquiry, are legion. Here, for example, what has happened when his motorcycle fell on him, moving it out of a paid storage into unpaid storage because he couldn't use it, is referred to as a motorcycle accident. The trial court refers to Mr. Zamenik on the volleyball court. He went into the backyard with his daughter and caught a ball and hurt his ligament. It's not an appropriate way to decide these cases. The evidence in the record is insufficient. They didn't develop any evidence in the record to support their contention that there was an unreasonable delay. There's no law in the state of Illinois that a certain amount of delay is per se an unreasonable delay, and there's no facts in the record to support anything to the contrary.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.